These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make all kinds of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country. And jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Today FM.
It all happens here.
Today FM.
Our first guest joins us from Mariupol in Ukraine. Diana Berg is an artist who lives there, having previously lived in Donetsk before having to leave it when it was annexed by the Russians. Diana, thank you very much for joining us today. Mariupol, have the Russians reached there yet?
Hello, Matt. Hello, do you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, yes. Have the Russians reached you yet there? Or are you still safe from them?
Well, yeah, we are attacked regularly. We have air strikes, we have shellings, we have many civilians suffered and killed, actually. We have several schools smashed with grades and air bombing. It started heavily from 2 days ago. Because first days of invasion, I think Russians were concentrated mostly on different locations like Kiev, Kharkiv, as you know, maybe, and Sumy. And those cities are really badly suffering from the invasion. But at the same time, Ukrainians are very, very resistant. And we are, I think, more of a... we are winning in spirit, and we are winning in we are winning this war.
As Ukraine looks to defend its key cities like Kyiv, does it have enough soldiers to defend places like Mariupol where you live?
Now it's we are having more and more soldiers because. Many people, just even civilians, they enroll in territorial defense. There are more and more opportunities for those who want to defend to join the resistance, not only militaries, not only volunteer battalions or National Guard battalions, but also territorial defenses and other... kind of structures are being organized. Then Zelensky have announced mobilization. So like reservists or militaries are also coming to the front line. Moreover, today, I think it was today because I'm a little bit confused with days now, you know, like
yes.
For last 5 days, has announced the amnesty for men who were jailed for some, I don't know, for some reason, yeah, who were in jail, but have army experience and have army experience, the amnesty if they go to the front line. Because, of course, we do need more people to defend. But as far as I know for now, many, there are enough people for now in Kyiv, for example.
And are you confident? Are you confident that Ukraine can hold off Russia? That this isn't something that's inevitable? That the Russians will take control of your country?
You know, it will never take control of our country spiritually. Now I can feel it like every day, every hour from the start of this invasion. I can feel it like really, I can really feel it that we are being more united, we're being more angry, we start being like real one nation. And it doesn't matter like if you are LGBT or you were like some businessman or anyone, like when we used to have different, you know, views, ideologies, we had arguments. 5 days ago we did. Now we don't have any other matter than staying in free Ukraine, you know? So this is something like a kind of a magic happens. Of course, it's the cost is really high because the infrastructure is just destroyed and people are killed. Civilians are killed. Today in Kharkiv, I don't know, several decades of people, many people were killed.
Yes.
Just with the grades. I hope that you know the news, the recent news, so that's what's happening.
And we saw some dreadful photographs of women and children mm-hmm. being killed. Videos, yeah. Very, very distressing.
Exactly.
Yeah, which I suppose must be so upsetting for people in Ukraine, but also gives you perhaps even a greater desire
rage.
To fight.
It gives us so much rage, and it gives us, you know, I don't want it to be hatred. I do not want to hate, but we start hating more and more because someone comes to our really beautiful country and just wants to blow it away from the earth. I mean, how disturbed and insane can it be, making like civilian people, making us just taking us brutally? The more they come inside Ukraine, the more they want us to surrender, the more we resist, and the more distanced we are. I mean, spiritually, mentally, now we will, you know, even after the start of this war in 2014, some people were quite indifferent, some apolitical, some older people were like having this kind of pro-Russian sympathy, because they remember Soviet Union and so on. But now what I think is that no brotherhood is even possible at all. No, there is no way we can ever surrender, even if they take us with all their airplanes and with the use of, I don't know, nuclear weapon, whatever. We will not surrender.
Diana Berg, I hope you stay safe, and hopefully this horror will end very, very quickly and the Russians will withdraw. Diana Berg from Mariupol in Ukraine, thank you for joining us.
Naomi O'Leary. I hope it won't be last word. The last word, that it won't be our last word.
Indeed.
This is it.
Thank you
so much.
Mm-hmm. Naomi O'Leary, the Irish Times Europe correspondent, is with us as well. Naomi, how significant may it have been that Ukraine today formally applied for membership of the European Union?
Hi, good to be with you. Yeah, so what we've seen is images announced by the Ukrainian government saying that they've signed an official application to the European Union. Now, I do not have confirmation yet from EU officials about whether this has been received yet. We're talking about communication between a war zone and, you know, a city a good way away. So we're still sort of waiting on confirmation. Now, in terms of accession to the EU, there's a process, there are rules, you know, it's all set down procedurally. So it's not something that sort of magically can happen, but, you know, political will is also important. I think what we're seeing here really is about a political statement more than something formal. It's about expressing, you know, solidarity with Ukraine. It's about Ukraine saying, you know, we want to integrate. And this is, it's to do with the general EU position of, you know, trying to support Ukraine politically as well. And it doesn't mean that suddenly we will see Ukraine as a member of the EU, because that's very, very far away. There will be a lot have to happen before that. And it's not something that you can really pursue while your government is fighting an invasion.
Let me bring in Professor Aoife O'Donoghue, and that Professor of International Law and Global Governments in Durham Law School, because Aoife, is it still quite a significant statement by Ukraine that they now see its future as being to its west, and that they have also seen the European Union react and come to its assistance and aid as if it is a member state when it actually isn't?
I think it is significant, and I think it's significant in the context of the talks. Clearly, that Ukraine has clearly set out its position of, you know, there is a potential future for us, which is within the European Union and within NATO, and that future is the polar opposite of what the future that Russia is currently pursuing. And I think it's important that Poland and Slovenia and Lithuania also supported, you know, came out with a joint statement and supported it. Now, as Naomi has said, you know, it takes a long time. I mean, there's a lot of very complicated legal changes you have to bring in. But it is, I think it's a statement of what one potential future, which is the complete opposite to the Russian one, and that Ukraine is setting out. And in the context of a day where talks began, I think that's an important kind of position that Ukraine is taking going into those talks.
Naomi O'Leary of the Irish Times, how then are the European Union leaders dealing with this threat from Putin to go nuclear? How much nervousness and anxiousness is that causing, or is it regarded as being something of a bluff?
I think, what I'm hearing from EU officials is certainly, you know, they don't like to hear references to nuclear weapons. Sure, that's not, that's a worrying thing to hear. But it's not something that will change their actions, change their policies. They said, you know, they're going to do what they have to do. There's been an incredible hardening of resolve in the last 4 or 5 days since the invasion. The Ukrainian government has been extremely effective in communicating its demands from the EU for backup, what it wants to see. There's been a huge surge of public demand as well, and public pressure on national leaders in the EU to do that, to do more to isolate Russia, to do more to support Ukraine. And it's all culminated in some really very significant steps by the EU, huge moves like, you know, funding military weapons, things that would have been unthinkable. Very, very far-ranging sanctions. One thing after another being announced, it's almost hard to keep up. But it's been a seismic few days, for sure.
But Professor Aoife O'Donoghue, how worried should we be that rational thinkers would not deploy nuclear weapons, but that if Putin is behaving irrationally, and if these sanctions, the economic ones, really start having an impact, that he could be the type who, in desperation or in his madness, could go to the nuclear option?
Well, it's always important to remember in that context that even if he orders it, it doesn't necessarily follow that the Russian military follow through with it. So there is he doesn't actually have a button in his office that he pushes. The other thing to remember is that even if that happened, even if he went that far, which it's unimaginable, but of course, you know, the unimaginable sometimes happens. The response might not be to respond with a nuclear weapon. Using a nuclear weapon is basically automatically a violation of international humanitarian law unless it's attacking a naval vessel at sea. It is next to impossible to use one and for it not to violate international humanitarian law. So in that scenario, what you're much more likely to see is an attack on Russia, but with conventional weapons taking out their nuclear capacity, rather than a nuclear kind of war that goes on between the parties. I think there would be a restraint shown on that front because of, you know, the idea of the consequences of it. So it is. I still think it is extremely unlikely. Firstly, because there is machinery within Russia. Within any nuclear power, it would never just be one person deciding it and then that's it, even somebody, a tyrant like Vladimir Putin. And then after that, I think the response is much more likely to be with traditional weapons than a nuclear response. I think it would probably be an immediate response. I think it would probably take out much of their military capacity, but I very much doubt that it would be a nuclear response.
Naomi O'Leary, is the EU holding out any hope for the so-called peace talks between Ukraine and Russia, given that the Russians seem to be making a series of demands which are close enough to demanding surrender by Ukraine?
My understanding is that hopes were never particularly high for negotiations, but you know, I think if there could be a solution, that would be great. You know, everybody would be very much in favour of that. But there would be a very, very high degree of caution exercised towards negotiations with Russia at this point, because there were weeks and weeks of diplomatic trips going back and forth to Moscow in the build-up to this, and EU leaders have openly said that they were lied to, that the President Vladimir Putin lied to them. And so they, you know, they don't have a lot of trust with Russia now as an interlocutor. They from their point of view, time was used to continue the build-up, just to buy time. And, you know, then all of the offers of agreements and understanding and diplomatic outreach, it all just sort of was thrown back in their face with this invasion, and they were made fools of. So there's, you know, there's very a huge amount of scepticism towards Russia in general as an interlocutor.
Just to finish off, Aoife O'Donoghue, has history shown that sanctions, economic sanctions, work well? Because there are suggestions now that the sanctions been implemented by the EU and by the United States may be amongst the toughest ever done, and that it will do serious economic damage to Putin, which may undermine him. Does history suggest we should be confident of that?
Well, I think sanctions have a very mixed record. Often they've been used against countries that aren't particularly economically powerful. Particularly after the end of the Cold War, there were often blanket sanctions that very, very much damaged individual people within the state rather than the government. They're much more targeted than they were. And I think what you're seeing in these sanctions in particular, you know, targeting sort of technical infrastructure and targeting specific individuals. I think because it's actually dealing with a country that is economically somewhat powerful, I mean, it's not in the top tier, but it is somewhat economically powerful, especially when you're talking about primary resources, it is more likely to have an economic impact than it is the ineffective, you would say, impact of sanctions on places like Libya or Iraq, where in fact you were just punishing the ordinary population and you were dealing with countries that weren't economically strong anyway or didn't have large infrastructure. So sanctions have a very mixed record, and these are in a new kind of approach to sanctions again. So I don't think you can say with any certainty, but I think you can see the impact already today with regard to the stock market and the ruble and things like that. So I think they are working in the way that the US and the European Union envisage them to work so far. Whether or not they stop the war happening, I think, is still open for question, open for debate. I think that'll be difficult. Even afterwards, I think it'll be difficult to say that it was the sanctions and which sanctions actually impacted.
Professor Aoife O'Donoghue from Durham Law School and Naomi O'Leary, Irish Times Europe correspondent. Thank you for joining us.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Weekdays from 4:30. Today.